Hello, and welcome to another episode of I Just Want to Be Included. My name is Veronica Olson, and today I am talking with Sarah Steinhauser. She is a co-founder of Queer Families of Livingston County here in Michigan. With the holiday season coming, we thought it would be good to have a conversation about navigating family get-togethers. The holidays can be a wonderful time, but it can also be very stressful, especially if you are visiting with family who you know have not accepted or acknowledged your coming out. Sarah has great tips on being proactive and dealing with the stress surrounding these family events. As always, I ask that you listen with an open heart and mind. You may not like or agree with everything you hear on this podcast, and that's okay. The goal is to bring humanity to difficult topics and to hear how other people are experiencing life. Nothing said in this podcast is to be taken as professional advice. Everything stated is based on personal experience, thoughts, and opinions. Please always find professional help in your community to deal with any issues you or your family might be facing. Enjoy the episode. So today I have Sarah Steinhauser with me. Sarah is the founder of Queer Families of Livingston County here in Michigan. And I'm going to let Sarah introduce herself and what her organization does before we get into our topic today. Go ahead, Sarah.
All right, thank you. So I'm one of the founders of Queer Families of Livingston. And I'm also the executive director. And okay. Before I kind of get into what we do, I always like to address the word queer. Sure. We get a lot of people who aren't really comfortable with the word queer because of the history that it comes from. It's being kind of taken back by the queer community, and there's a quote that somebody put on Instagram that I really like that kind of sums it up that I tell people. So the quote is, "Queer saves time explaining myself and I'm tired. Queer does a better job of being all encompassing than a string of letters of any length. Queer is vague and that's good. Queer doesn't insist on hard lines between categories. Queer means weird. We know and we revel in it." I feel like that's important. We're really trying to take it back, especially the younger generations. We are aware that the older generations is still kind of a sore word with everything that they've dealt with, but we're doing our best to bring it back. So
no, I appreciate that explanation because two of my kids have used the term queer to define themselves. And it's what I struggle with because when I was growing up, that was a derogatory term. And so I appreciate the explanation. And when I go to say LGBTQI, you know, it's easy to miss something in that. And so I can understand picking one word and it's just all encompassing and you're not excluding anybody, you know, in that those letters that have been chosen or added on. So I do appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, those letters can go on for an endless amount of time. So,
right. Yeah.
So Queer Families of Livingston is a nonprofit, and we do monthly events for families in the community. Mostly we hold them in libraries, at local parks, and it's just really low-key events, just either some kind of arts and crafts or some kind of organized game for anybody. You don't have to be directly tied to the queer community to be participating in these events.
Okay.
With that said, queer families, I get asked that a lot. What is a queer family? A queer family is anybody, if you have a loved one that is in the queer community. So it doesn't have to be you yourself or your kid. It could be one of your nieces, nephews. It could be your fourth cousin removed. You know, it could be anything.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. So it's just anybody. Anybody can come. And so we also do... we also go to the different high schools around Livingston County, and we work with the Alliance Clubs provide some education and help them learn about advocacy. So And that's been really fun. That's been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So we do a little bit of everything, but mostly education and just a lot of community outreach.
Okay, that is great. And so in Livingston County, that's not necessarily an easy area to be in with this particular issue, I would think. I don't live there, but...
It is tough. It is tough. Livingston County is a very red county. Right. So we definitely saw the need for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And so when you go into high schools and work with clubs there, how important it is for kids to have support and to have somebody that they can talk to. It's got to be huge.
Absolutely. And a big part of what we do is we want to be visible. We want to be highly visible because I am queer. And when I was growing up, I didn't see queer people. I just, I never did. So even just kids seeing like, oh, there is a queer adult that lives a normal life.
Right. That's an adult and functioning on some level.
Yeah, exactly. That's a better way. Right.
Yeah. And that's important too. Kids know that even if they're struggling at the moment, you know, there is hope. Things will get better in some way, shape, or form in the future. You can get, take charge of your life. You know, it's not going to be easy necessarily, but it's good to have that example. So I really like that you're doing that. Anything else you wanted to say about the organization before we get into our topic today? Or
if you have any questions, we have a website. You can just Google Queer Families of Livingston and it will come up. And one thing we try to encourage use of is our Ask Us Anything, where you can, and this is mostly for parents.
Right.
It could be for anybody, but it seems to be utilized a lot by parents who have questions. They're not comfortable asking their kid.
Yep.
And they just want to learn more, or they're afraid to offend their child by the way they want to ask a question. So throw those questions at us, and you know, it's definitely no judgment, and we will be happy to talk with you.
Great. When did you start this organization? How old is it?
It's only just a year old now.
Okay.
Just a little bit over a year. Yeah.
That's so great.
We've come a long way.
I'm sure you have. So today we're going to talk about navigating the holidays. And we're getting to a season where people are getting together with family in ways that they don't normally get together with throughout the year. And for most people, this can be a stressful time. You know, even if you're not dealing with queer issues, just being with family can be stressful, right? Because you're bringing people together that don't always get along, don't always agree. You know, there's in any family, there's issues. But I specifically wanted to address when you are queer and you've made, if you've come out and made changes that people don't around you don't understand, how do you deal with that? And especially, how can you be proactive? If you know you're walking into a situation that's going to be stressful, what things you can do? So that's kind of what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely an important topic. Holidays are not always the best time of the year.
No, no, they are not. I think most people would agree with that. So the first thing I wanted to ask you, just to give people some understanding, is as someone who's queer and has walked into multiple family events, holidays and probably birthday parties, weddings, like everything, what does it feel like to walk into a situation where you know there are people that don't agree, don't like, don't want to accept where you're at in life? What does that do to you as a person walking into those situations?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This is everywhere. And especially so yeah. I wear my hair short and I come off very masculine. So, I mean, this is a hard thing.
Yeah.
I have a hard time passing as straight pretty much wherever I go. So, yes, this really happens a lot. But so I came out like 10, 15-ish years ago. And back then, it was awful. You know, I was very anxious. I tried to avoid any conversations that could lead down the road to any queer topics or anything relating to any part of my personal life or relationship. It was just constantly just over hyper aware of what everyone is saying and talking about, and just trying to just stay in my little corner and stay out of the way. So that was really hard, and it's exhausting. It's absolutely exhausting. Cause you have to be on that. You're on that high feel. You have to be on that high alert. Now I wouldn't say I'm like completely over all of those things, but it's a lot different now. It's taken a lot of work, but I can still see myself like identifying cues in conversations like, okay, this is eventually going to lead down a queer topic or something in my personal life. And that's just from habit from the beginning.
Right. And so what are the fears and concerns for people who do walk into these situations? Like, what is the ultimate fear that you're going in with? I can see how there's a lot of anxiety, but ultimately, what is the fear there?
For, I would say violence. I mean, physical violence, definitely emotional violence. You just don't know what you're going to, you don't exactly know what you're going to walk into. So you go worst case scenario, you're like, okay, is this going to, you know, set off some big fight with someone? And then I have to figure out if I'm going to stay, if I'm going to fight. That typically doesn't happen. Obviously it does happen, but for the more day-to-day situations, you know, you're worried about being isolated at a socially isolated event, you know, like nobody's going to sit by you. Nobody's going to talk with you, or it's just going to be really awkward. Or if you have, if it's a family, if you're going into a family thing, a big one for me was always, you know, these surprise interventions, you know, like, you know, we love you, but you know, you're going down this wrong path of the queer life. Like, how can we fix them? And I come from a religious background, so that was always a fear of mine. And it does happen. And sometimes it sounds silly in my head to think that, like, that's a fear, but it really is, and it really happens. And a lot of times with those surprise interventions, even if they're not planned, sometimes they just naturally happen through a conversation that's repeated. And then this is where we see a lot of youth that end up getting kicked out of the house. Like, you have to stop being queer, or you have to leave this house and the family forever. So we see a lot of that. So that is definitely a big concern.
Yeah. And that is something we will specifically talk about, because we come from the same religious background pretty much.
Yes.
And so I understand that. And as a parent with queer children, it's not been easy to navigate Christianity and my kids, and who do I talk to and who do I tell and how do I protect them? It's messy, you know, it's just messy, at least from a parent's perspective. I have felt that. But I do appreciate that people don't want to be put on the spot and, you know, don't want a surprise intervention. But I know that a lot of times with families coming from a loving place. So we will have conversations about that, because that's a huge issue, you know, and it's been very real to you. It's been very real in my house. So we will definitely spend time talking about that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great topic.
So for somebody who's walking in to a family event, what realistic expectations can they set for themselves? You know, kind of what you're walking into, as far as, you know, you probably know who will be there. How do you set yourself up for, you know, a real expectation of what's going to happen and how you're going to get through the day?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you're newer to being out and open, I would say to expect this to be a time where you feel like extra emotionally, even physically exhausted.
Yeah.
And that can be, you know, because you're going to have a lot more big emotions, whether you they're conscious or subconscious, they're going to be there. And these, you know, anger, anxiety, sadness, shutting down, all, you know, all those things. And this could happen a couple days, even a couple weeks before an event, if you know it's coming, or in a couple days or a couple weeks after an event. It really takes a toll on people. And I think we don't recognize how impactful that is. And it's not just for the event itself. It's a lot of thinking ahead of time.
Sure.
So I would also say, you know, it's normal to get a lot of questions from family members or friends, and, you know, in a sense of like, are you sure that, you know, that you're gay, you know, right. You know, how do you know? Cause you dated this gender before, but now you're dating this gender. So like, how do you really, you know, and I don't want to say they're always coming from a bad place. I mean, it comes from, you know, your family and everything, right. But those comments, you know, do typically come up when you've just come out.
Yeah.
So it's just always good to be kind of prepared for that and just like sure. have something to say or just shut it down right away. Just kind of know what to do in that situation.
So is preparing kind of some statements and answers in your head ahead of time? Like if you know that these certain topics are going to come up or these certain questions, is it helpful to think ahead of time what you might say so you're not doing it in the moment?
Yes, it really is. And you can even like look some stuff up. The Human Rights Campaign website has, you know, different statements and stuff you can say too. And it's very like good. It's good to have just like a general statement and even a general statement for if you don't know what to say at that time. Something as simple as I'm not comfortable talking about this right now, maybe another time, and leave it at that. But absolutely preparing statements can be extremely helpful.
And I would think that sometimes saying, I don't know yet, is okay too. Because just because someone has come out as queer or, you know, whatever, that doesn't mean they have it all figured out.
Oh, right.
Absolutely. And so people have to be willing to, you know, be given permission to say, I don't know. And people have to be willing to accept that because they.
Yeah. And I think that's a really great point. I mean, there's times where people can be out in the queer community and they change whatever they go by, you know, over and over again. Every decade, it's something different. And that's just.
Sure. Sure. Another issue is how do you deal with talk that is offensive? This is a big issue in our country right now. And so I know there are certain people in your family that are just going to say things. Mm-hmm. Because that's truly what they think. That's truly what they believe, how they feel, whatever. How do you deal with that? You know, whether someone's saying it intentionally to hurt you or not. And a lot of times it's not, right? Sure. A lot of times people are saying things that are really offensive and they don't realize how offensive they're being. Mm-hmm. But how do you deal with that?
Yeah, that's a tough one, especially said lately. It's definitely been a big battle in our country. So my first main advice is to choose your battles. And, you know, you don't have to fight every battle. You don't.
Right.
That nobody should have to, and it's not realistic to do that. So the first thing, you know, to consider is, you know, think about the intent. You know, was it supposed to be harmful? Was it, you know, just someone just not being educated enough and, you know, trying not to be harmful, but saying something?
Sure.
And so you have to decide, do you want to address it? First of all, do you want to address, and then do you want to address it right then and there? Or do you want to address it at a later time? So it's okay to address it right then and there. I would just suggest to take, you know, a deep breath, you know, first to make sure, you know, you're as calm as you can be.
Right.
And you can say something just as simple as, you know, I would just like to take a second to let you know that while I know what you said was not meant to be offensive, you know, it was, and then you can give an example of like how to better word it. Or if you don't even know how to better word it, and you can be honest, be like, I don't know how to make that better, but you know, maybe that's something we can work on together or something. But like,
So it's okay to acknowledge that it was offensive. You just have to find a way to do it that doesn't maybe escalate.
Exactly.
The situation you're in, hopefully, not that that's totally in your control. That's also dependent on the other person, but you can only do what you can do, right?
Absolutely. And that comes a lot with like, you know, you as an individual, you know, you have a good idea of like who you might be able to say that to and it'd be okay. And if you're not sure about it, then you can address it later, you know, just one-on-one with them, whether that be in person or through a text message, if you're not sure how they'll handle it in the moment.
Sure.
So if it is offensive and you know they were doing it, you know, on purpose, it's that can be intimidating to try to say that to correct them in the moment. So it's okay if you don't. I feel like people feel that they have this that they have to. They have this burden right. of always calling somebody out when they say something hurtful, and it might not be the safe thing to do at the time. I mean, I'm running this nonprofit, and people are still saying offensive things. And there are times I'm just not mentally able to come back with something. Like right. I still won't address it all the time because it's right. just not realistic.
And it's exhausting.
It is so exhausting. Yeah. It really is.
I would think so.
But if you don't address it in the moment, you know, that's fine. And you can, you know, say something like, what you just said is offensive, and I hope in the future you will consider not saying that again. And it is highly effective to call people out, and especially in a group setting when they're saying something offensive, because they will eventually think twice before saying it again, because they don't like that. They don't like that attention
right.
on them. So it is nice to be able to do that, but it's not, again, it's not something that you have to do.
Right. So what are some strategies when you go into a situation where you know you're going to be uncomfortable? You know, you have this anxiety building up. You've got to go to someone's house. What are some things, some tools you can have in your toolkit going in to deal with that kind of anxiety that's building up?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a very great question. So if you're going into it as the queer person, you're going into a situation, it's good to have a friend either physically present, or that's kind of hard to do a lot of times. So you can just have right. somebody on standby through text messages, like, hey, I'm at this family event from this time to this time. You know, can you just be like extra aware of when your phone goes off so I can reach out to you during if I need that okay. support. If you don't have that, you can, maybe there's a group, like a social media group that you're involved with that uh-huh. can also help with that.
Okay.
One of my favorite things to do is to like find like your favorite memes or, you know, little TikTok videos that just are so random and just like can distract you for yeah. a little bit of time, where you can excuse yourself to the bathroom and just kind of, you know, get out of your head for a little bit.
Sure.
And just have that on standby. If you have somebody that you know will be there that can be supportive, it'd be great to talk to them ahead of time and just say, you know, this is a family event and I'm feeling a little nervous or uncomfortable. So, yeah. you know, if I can kind of lean on you throughout, that would be great.
Yeah. I like that. I like that advice. Kind of having your point person, who's kind of looking out for you and, kind of, you know, has a heads up that, you know, you might need a little extra support,
absolutely.
During that event. So I do like that. What I also wanted to talk to you about was, since I'm coming at it from a parent's perspective, mm-hmm. what is the best way I can provide support for my kids who are coming into these family situations with the anxiety? What can we kind of do ahead of time to help them?
So this is where communication is just vital. I mean, you okay. having these conversations, not the day of, not the day before, but, you know, sure. at least a couple days in advance to really get everybody's thoughts, like, okay, if I'm the parent and my child is the queer individual, what are you comfortable with? Do you want me to correct people with your pronouns? Do you want me to correct them if they use your dead name? Trying to get a feel for what they're comfortable with, because even though they might be adamant in the physical house with you or your spouse that you have to use the right pronouns, you have to use, you know, my chosen name, that might not be the case for extended family, and it might make sure. situations worse. So right. while you may be coming from a good place, you know, it's good to understand what your child actually is comfortable with.
Yeah.
And the same goes for the child to the parent. What is the parent also comfortable correcting? Because the parents, as, you know, as supportive as they want to be, it's not always that easy when they're dealing with their family, especially their parents, who are typically, who are, you know, from a different generation, and it's typically harder.
No, I was just saying that's the hard part from a parent's perspective is there's, I feel like there's only so much I can do. I can't control other people, you know? And we, my non-binary child and I had a conversation about a year ago before Thanksgiving. And, you know, they kept saying, I refuse to be dead named. You know, I'm not going to accept that. And they were wanting me to constantly correct. And, you know, I kind of had, I had an issue just because, you know, from my perspective is like, okay, I've had a conversation with grandma and grandpa. They know what you prefer. I don't feel like I'm in a position as their child to constantly, you know, correct them. That doesn't feel right to me either. And so just, you know, these situations are not easy to navigate. You know, I want to make everyone happy, which is not realistic, but I still do. You know, I want my child to be safe and happy, but I also don't want to make my parents feel awful because they haven't gotten to a place where they understand or are ready to say the new name and pronouns. It's messy. It's not easy.
Yeah, it really is. And that's why it's, you know, it's just so important to have those conversations ahead of time, because it just gets messier if your child thinks that you're comfortable doing all of this and then something happens and it's not corrected in the moment, and then it just becomes a bigger issue.
Right. And one thing for me is like setting up, how do I set up a safe environment? Right. Because I grew up in a day and time where like family obligation was huge. You know, you have to be here. You have to be there because this person's expecting it and that person's expecting it. And I've kind of had to go back and revisit that with my kids. You know, realistically, do they have to be there? You know, just because it's this event and, you know, grandparents may want them there and expect them there. Do I have a right to force them or, you know, kind of draw a line and say, no, you have to go, even though I know you're going to be uncomfortable. Those are things that I'm kind of gripping with too, because it's different from how I grew up, but I'm rethinking it, you know, from my kids' perspective.
This is such a huge generational shift that we are seeing. So you have the, like your parents' generation, you know, the grandma and grandpa, where family's everything. There is no if, ands, or buts. It is what it is. You're doing everything as a family. It doesn't matter if somebody makes you mad, you're going to go and you're going to smile and be happy. And that just is what it is. And then you have the boomer generation, the younger ones. So like 60s, 50s.
Right.
And they can kind of see that where their parents are coming from is like maybe not the best way, but they also, that's how they grew up. That's how they grew up. They can't really, they don't feel confident going against, you know, their parents.
Right.
And how it was growing up. Again, family is family. You're gonna show up, you're gonna do this, and you're gonna be here for this amount of time. So what we're seeing though is the younger generation, and I think a lot of it has to do with, we're starting to become open about mental health and setting boundaries is a huge thing that we hear a lot about now. And we're seeing that, especially with family, like, okay, just because it's a family thing, it doesn't mean we have to go. Like it sounds so simple, but it's such like a new concept in our society.
I know. It really is.
It's a lot of family are almost in like shell shock from it, because like it's like mind blowing, like, whoa, what do you mean, like, hey, I don't have to go, or like, whoa, you're not coming, like, that doesn't even make any sense, because it's family.
That's not an option I give you.
Right, exactly. And it's like, no, it is an option, and it's not an easy option. I personally stopped doing, I would say, at least 75-80% of family obligations, and it was hard. It was so hard for me. It caused a lot of family drama, and my parents were stuck in the middle of it, because I was at the end where I'm like, this is my boundary. I'm not coming. It is what it is. Deal with it. And my grandparents were like, no, that's not how it's going to be. And then you have my parents who are trying to make everybody happy.
Right. Yeah.
But it's just, you just can't. It's a very uncomfortable situation that you have no control over, and that in itself is something to try to reflect on, is you don't have control over it.
Yeah.
And I know some teens that I work with have suggested, like, they've compromised with their parents. Like, okay, I will go with the first like 30 minutes or the last like 30 minutes, and then I'm going to excuse myself because I have to go to work or whatever it is. Sure. That they'll use the excuse. So that way they make their appearance, they say hi to grandma and grandpa, they catch up a little bit, but then they're gone before it gets anywhere too deep.
Right.
And so it's kind of like a middle ground to think about.
Sure. No, I like that. And, you know, I think from your perspective, it's finding like, you know, I do care about my family, and it's not that I don't want to see them, but I don't want to make myself uncomfortable and unhappy either. And that's just such a hard line. You know, it's a hard line for everybody. But I think especially for queer people, it's even harder. It has to be more of an emotionally taxing decision.
Well, I know for me personally, it really, like, I felt like I was breaking the entire family apart, and like everything was my fault. And, you know, and that's how it was being portrayed to me. Like, right. how could you do this to us? And
right.
you know, you take that very, you know, you don't take that lightly, and
it
is hard. And that's, you know, that's why I always encourage therapy for anybody.
Absolutely. So one other thing I wanted to talk to you about as well, I have people asking me a lot of questions as a parent. You know, how do I talk to somebody who's changed their name, changed their pronouns, who's come out as queer? A lot of times they're afraid of saying and doing the wrong thing, which is a fair question, because I think people want to show love and support, but they are truly afraid of saying and doing the wrong thing. So what would you say to somebody like that?
So as far as asking the queer person themselves or asking you as the parent?
The queer person.
A queer person, sure. This, in general, if you're coming from a place of trying to gain an understanding and trying to educate yourself, it's typically received as such, as long as you know your relationship with the person, I guess, and how you word it. And you can even start by saying, I don't know how to word this, and I don't know if I'm going to word it incorrectly.
Yeah.
But, you know, if I do, please correct me, but I just need to know. I just want to know whatever it is your question is. And even if you mean it in the best intention possible, depending where that queer person's at, it doesn't matter how you say it. It can just not be taken well. So you kind of have to gauge where that person's at and their comfort level.
Okay.
Especially if you're going to do it at a family event, you really got to, you know, be confident that the queer person is in a spot where they can answer that question.
Sure.
And if you have these burning questions, you can ask them, you know, in a personal setting where it's just the two of you, or that's when you can, you know, refer to like Queer Families of Livingston.
Right. Website to get information.
Exactly.
So what do queer individuals need to hear from other people? You know, when you're going in to these family events, and, you know, what do they want to hear that would make them feel comfortable, relaxed? Do you know what I'm asking? Like, what is it that I could say to my child or my niece or nephew or whoever that would make them feel acknowledged and loved and supported?
Absolutely. So there are many different things you can say, but to do something simple, you can say, hey, this might suck, but just know I'm here if you need me. Or, you know, if you need to step out and step away from everybody, especially as a parent saying that to your child, like, it's okay to excuse yourself and go to a safe physical spot, whether that be their own room or your car or, you know, anything. Like, it's okay to step away. And it's okay if you're on your phone to kind of disconnect for a while. That's okay, because I'm a mom, and I know when my kids are on electronics and you're around family, you're like, okay, get off the tablet or get off the phone. Like, you know, and I think that's something that's also a generational thing. Like, be here, be present with everything. So I think just giving that permission, like, hey, it's okay if you have to do this to care for yourself in the moments. I think it's important for people to understand that holidays, like you were saying in the beginning, holidays are stressful. Right. And we have this notion in our society that the holidays are the best time of the year. And if you're not happy during this time, what's wrong with you?
Yeah,
and exactly. It's I call it the Hallmark effect, right? Like you're supposed to have all these magical feelings. And
yeah,
and it's just not, it's not realistic. And we see suicide rates increase around the holidays. And sure, that's probably part of it because, okay, if I can't be happy in the best time of year, I'm never going to be happy. There's something wrong with me. And right, that's not the case. You know, this is an extremely stressful time. And, you know, the validating all the feelings is an amazing thing that can be done. Even if you can, even if you are a queer person and you're going to a family event where it's generally okay, and people and your family members, they might not be marching in the pride parades, but they're not, they're also not rallying against you.
Right.
It's still okay to be uncomfortable as that queer person and as like a family or friend, it just validating that. Because sure, I've heard 100 times before, like, okay, well, your family's not kicking you out of the house, so you should be happy. Okay, right. But then that puts another layer of stress on the queer person because, okay, they're right. It could be worse, so I should be fine. So
really settle for what this is.
Exactly. So really validating their feelings, letting them know it's okay to step away are two very big things that I would suggest. Sure.
I like that. And it's pretty much giving them permission to be what and who they are.
Absolutely.
So, you know, if it's a day where you're struggling, where you have anxiety, where you're not comfortable, it's okay. It's acknowledging it's okay to feel that way.
Absolutely.
And do what you need to do. You know, you're not going to ruin the holiday, you know, if you have to step away or whatever, you know, you need to do to kind of get through the day. So I do like that. The last thing I wanted to ask you is, you are someone that's been married and you have a couple of kids. And so I'm interested to hear about how the holidays changed for you when you had a spouse and children in addition to bring into these family situations that had to have made those family events even more challenging.
Yes, it definitely did. So when you come out, you got your initial coming out, you know, the movie scene where, okay, I'm gay. Everybody knows, you know, right, this is great. Everything's going to be fine now. But coming out is a never ending process. And when you add these additional people into your lives, it's like you're coming back out again. So right, when my now ex-wife, when she came into the picture, I had to worry about her feelings and how my family was going to treat her, and kind of in the middle, and like how she was going to respond to them, because as a queer person herself, she automatically has her guard up and kind of waiting for somebody to whatever, you know, fill in the blank. And, you know, you just wonder, like, is she going to be considered my spouse? Is she just going to be considered my roommate? Which was the case for most of my family, is, you know, a roommate. And
they made it acceptable in their head that they
could deal with. That's how they were processing it. And it could, and it would show, because, you know, when you have the hetero family members who are new couples, they would get like the couple gifts and, right, you know, so it was obvious, you know, and like, so then you have the kids that come into it, and then it's like, you shake up the whole family again, because they can. My ex-wife could have been the roommate for forever in their heads. But now that we have kids, it's like shaking it all up again. Like, oh, this is real. Like, this is harder now for the family to accept, because they're having a harder time just accepting all of it. It's a big change.
Sure.
And then you worry about the kids. Like, how are the kids going to be treated? Are they going to be treated differently because me and my spouse were treated differently, in micro ways. Luckily, I would say, because, you know, there's always people that have it better and there's always people that have it worse. I always talk a lot. There's always a ladder system, but no matter where you're at on the ladder, there are parts that suck, and that's just part of it. But it's hard with the kids. And when they're younger, you're really on guard and it's hard to relax because you're waiting for somebody to say something that hurts your kids.
Yeah.
And my kids are 4 and 6. So I haven't really gotten to the older part of of this situation, and I am nervous for it, because right now I feel like they can overlook a lot of things. Yeah. And like a lot of things will go over their heads, but as they get yeah. older and they're growing up with their cousins, you know, then it's a whole nother thing. Like, are the cousins going to end up saying something?
Right.
Well, it's a never ending worry.
Yeah. I can definitely see that. And just being on the parent part of this, things are always coming up unexpected to deal with. Oh, well, we haven't dealt with this scenario since you've been come out as non-binary with a different name. And so I can understand how there's this constant shifting and changing and readjusting. And I appreciate you talking about how, you know, being a couple and not being treated like a couple, and things that would be done for another couple, you know, are obviously not done for you. And I think people need to be so aware of that, that, you know, those are little things, but they're hurtful things, right? Because you're not being acknowledged for what you are and who you are. And so I think those are really good things to bring up to people. Acknowledge that you're a couple, you know. Absolutely. If you would give that one couple an ornament, you know, with the date on it, then do it for, you know, this other couple.
Exactly. And I think a lot of times family, there are times when, you know, family wants to do the right thing, but they don't think it through all the way. And it makes it harmful. Like a great example, like with my kids, all the grandkids got these hand quilted, take so much labor and love to make these quilts for them. And then my kids got like a tie blanket. You know, we're grateful for that. But also when every child gets, you know, a different quality of something, and then your children get, you know, something that is obviously takes less time and less effort, it's harmful. It hurts.
Yeah, I'm sure. One of the things I hear from people a lot, especially in the Christian world, is, you know, well, if I do that, if I give them that gift, if I give them that special quilt, then it's like I'm endorsing what they're doing, you know, mm-hmm. like they, and I know this is very indicative from our history, but it's like, they're so afraid that if they follow through that gift, you know, it's going to reflect something that they don't want it to reflect. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Oh yeah. That's like, that's for sure. That's a common issue in my family is they're like, we love you and all these things, all these things, and we're going to treat you like everybody else, but we're not going to acknowledge this certain part because I don't want to tell you that it's okay.
Right.
I don't want to tell you it's okay. Like I had people come to my wedding, very close family members who were like, I'm coming to the wedding, but I need you to know that I don't agree with it. And I still think you're going to hell. And I'm like, okay, well, don't come to my wedding then. I don't know.
That's not the kind of support you want.
Exactly. And what I understand, you know, because I grew up religious. I'm no longer religious, but I grew up religious until I was 21. And I see their perspective, but it's hard. It's hard on everyone's end.
And it's harmful. I mean, it's just harmful.
Yes.
Okay, Sarah, well, you have been wonderful. I appreciate all of your comments and all of your suggestions. The holidays are tough, but I think if for all of us, regardless of what situation we're walking into, if we can be a little proactive and stop and think about how we might handle some things and some certain situations ahead of time, I think that's good for all of us.
Yes, just have those conversations. Okay. Yeah. You can't just expect the parent to know what the queer child wants or is expecting, and, you know, and vice versa.
And I like how you said, don't do it the day of or the day before, because these do get emotional.
Yes.
They just, you know, my experience is they get emotional. So have it way before you're dealing with day of and night of and trying to clean the house and cook or whatever it is you need to do, pack.
Exactly.
Give time and space for people to share their feelings and thoughts and for people to reflect and process and find a way to move forward. I think that's super important as well.
Absolutely.
All right, Sarah, well, I appreciate your time and we will definitely have you back.
This has been great.
There are lots of topics I would love to talk to you about.
Absolutely. I'd love to have more conversation.
We will. All right, Tara, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you for joining me today. And a huge thank you to Sarah for the great information and advice. The link to her website, Queer Families of Livingston County, will be available in the show notes. This is one of many resources available to queer people, along with their family and friends who are looking for support and answers. Hang in there. We are all doing the best we can. Have a good week.